This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
The night sky for February 2013. And we do have a rather lovely sky. After sunset, you'll see that beautiful trio, really, of constellations, Orion, Taurus, Gemini, towards the south. And they'll be gradually moving over to the southwest as the evening draws on. The three central stars of Orion that make up its belt act as very good pointers. Down to the lower left, you'll see the star Sirius, the brightest star in the northern hemisphere, Canis Majoris Alpha. If you have binoculars and just look a little few degrees below Sirius, just scan down below it, you'll come across a very pretty little open cluster called M41. Most of the stars in it are bluish, but there's one very nice red giant in the centre. It looks very pretty in the telescope. Coming upwards from Orion, you obviously come to Taurus, and that's looking particularly interesting at the moment. As well as the Hyades and Pleiades cluster, you also have an interloper, which is the planet Jupiter, and we'll come back to that later on. Higher up, above Orion and Taurus, we have the constellation of Auriga, with its bright star Capella. It lies along the plane of the Milky Way, and there are some very nice open clusters, M36, M37 and M38, that one can pick out in binoculars. And then over to the left is Gemini, the heavenly twins, with the bright stars Castor above and Pollux below. Down at the lower left of Castor's legs, to the right, as seen in the sky, you'll actually see a rather nice open cluster called M35. There's one bright star down below Gemini, which is Procyon, one of only really two visible stars in Canis Minor. And over, down to the left from Gemini, we have Cancer. It has a very nice, quite broad cluster called Praesepe, the Beehive Cluster, or M44. That's in the Messier catalogue. Below it is a rather less often observed cluster called M67. It's an open cluster, and that will appear in the highlights shortly. So as the evening draws on, Leo the Lion, with its bright star Regulus, is rising, and high above that, we have Ursa Major, with the bright stars making the plough. With binoculars, have a look at the middle star of the three stars that make up its handle. The two stars there that you'll see, actually, are called Alcor and Mizar. And with the telescope, you'll see the brighter of the two, Mizar, is actually a double star itself. A very pretty little sight in a small telescope. So what about the planets? Well, it's no doubt that this month the highlight, for the third month in a row, actually, is the planet Jupiter, as I said, in the constellation of Taurus the Bull. It's now high in the southern sky after sunset, crosses the meridian at about 7:45 at the beginning of February. By month's end, it will actually transit at sunset, so it'll be just west of south as darkness falls. And very nicely, at the moment, Jupiter is high up in the ecliptic, about as high as it ever gets, so it has an elevation of over 60 degrees, as seen from the UK. It's shining at magnitude -2.5 and lies about 6 degrees to the upper right of the star Aldebaran, the eye of the bull. Now, Jupiter has been moving towards the west. That's its retrograde motion. It actually ended that, so it's now going to start moving through February very slowly eastwards, dropping its brightness very slightly to about -2.3. Ends up more or less where it started from, about 5 degrees to the upper right of Aldebaran. Its angular size is now dropping, but it's still around 40 arc seconds during the month. So even a small telescope will show plenty of detail, with the bright zones and darker bands crossing the disk, and up to 4 of the Galilean moons visible as they weave their way around the giant planet. With a telescope at the right time, you might be able to pick out the great red spot. Saturn, on the other hand, is a morning object. It's lying in Libra. It rises at about 0100 UT as February begins, and by 1130 UT by month's end. So it transits before dawn at an elevation, sadly now, of only 25 degrees, because Saturn is now moving towards the lower part of the ecliptic. so its elevation will gradually get less over the next few years. The good news is that the rings have now opened up to just over 19 degrees to the line of sight. That's at their best for about 6 years. We're observing the southern hemisphere, and much of the northern hemisphere will be hidden by the rings. At the very beginning of February, Saturn is at about 90 degrees in angle from the Sun, and so you can actually see the shadow of the planet, which is side-lit on the rings. For the first half of the month, Saturn is moving very slowly towards the wide double star Alpha Librae. The separation drops to about 4.2 degrees on the 15th. But then Saturn starts its retrograde motion, and therefore gradually begins to move westwards and moves away again. With a small scope, you should be able to spot Cassini's division, and also the brightest of the satellites of Saturn, which is called Titan. Mercury is going to reach eastern elongation, that's when it's furthest away from the Sun in angle, and will actually provide us with our best evening view of the planet this year. As the month begins, it's shining at magnitude minus 1.1, but it'll still be very hard to spot in the twilight. What you perhaps need to do is to get to a site with a good low western horizon before the Sun has set, and note where the Sun sets. When it has set, it's then safe to use binoculars to sweep the sky to the left and somewhat above of where the Sun has set, and if it's clear, you should pick up Mercury. Once found, and a little bit darker as the Sun gets below the horizon, you should spot it with your unaided eye. A small telescope will show at the beginning of the month a 5.2 arc second disk, which actually is 95% illuminated. As the month progresses, the brightness actually falls, and the angular size, however, increases to about 9 arc seconds. Again, you won't really be able to spot any detail on the surface. Now, Mars has been low in the west after sunset for some months now. It's just moved into Aquarius, and at the beginning of the month, you have a chance of seeing it at about 6 degrees above the horizon in the southwest, let's say 45 minutes after sunset at the very beginning of the month. But by the end of February, it'll be lost in the Sun's glare. It's shining with a magnitude of plus 1.2. Its angular size, however, is only 4 arc seconds, which, given also its low elevation, means that you won't have a chance of seeing any surface markings on its salmon pink disk. Well, finally, Venus. Well, it's now passing behind the Sun. I suppose you might just spot it at the very beginning of February. It's only going to be 3 degrees above the horizon as the Sun sets, so it'll be hard to spot. But it's not really going to be visible again until towards the end of May, and then it'll be in the evening sky rather than it has been in the morning sky. Well, what about the highlights for the month? I've actually talked about Jupiter. The Great Red Spot is currently a pale shade of pink, but you should be able to see it as quite a large feature in the South Equatorial Belt. The features we see have been changing quite a bit over the last few years. That for a while, the South Equatorial Belt vanished completely. It's now returned to its normal wide state. In the night sky page on the Jodrell Bank website, just Google night sky, I've produced a little chart of the main features in Jupiter's atmosphere based on an image I took in December last year. I've mentioned that Mercury is going to be quite good this month, and perhaps on February the 8th, you have a last chance of spotting Mars, as Mercury and Mars lie just 0.3 degrees apart, Mercury to the upper right of Mars. You'll need a good low western horizon, as I mentioned, and probably need to use binoculars, but don't use them until the Sun has set. Well, we have something which is probably rather rare, and I think well worth having a look for, should it be clear. A near-Earth object called NEO-2012-DA14 is going to come so close to the Earth on the 15th, it will actually be within the orbits of the geostationary satellites, when it will pass just 31,000 kilometres above the Indian Ocean. It's quite close to the star Alioth, which is in the handle of the plough. We have a chance of seeing it with binoculars at around 7th magnitude initially. And again, I've given a chart to give you some idea of where to look. Let's hope it's clear, because I really would like to see that. That's pretty close. There'll be a very nice skyscape on the evening of February the 18th. Jupiter, as we've said, lying between the Hyades and the Pleiades cluster in Taurus, is joined with an 8-day-old moon over to the east. That should be quite pretty to see. Now, I mentioned M67 in Cancer. On the evening of the 23rd, the moon is going to occult that particular cluster. That's always a rather nice thing to watch. The occultation of the cluster itself starts at about 1950 UT and ends at about 2140 UT. That's if my Stellarium software works well. That evening, in fact, it also occults two stars, 50 Cancri, which is before, and 60 Cancri, which is afterwards. So that's actually quite interesting. Finally, on the morning of February the 25th, Saturn's rings occult an 11.5 magnitude star. So you would need a telescope to see this. It might just be glimpsed, that is the star, as it passes behind Cassini's division at about 0130 UT. I guess visually only if the seeing is very good, but it might actually show up using a webcam to image Saturn at that time. Later, at about 0245, it will actually emerge from behind the A-ring over to the left of Saturn. Now, normally, things actually go behind a planet on the left, eastern side, and come out on the western side. But this is the other way around, simply because by then, Saturn has started moving in retrograde. So Saturn's actually moving westwards rather than eastwards, as it normally does. And just to make the point that it was an unexpected occultation of a star by the rings of Uranus that led to their discovery in 1977. Astronomers were hoping to study the atmosphere of Uranus as the light from the star passed through the atmosphere. They set up their equipment well before the occultation and then got somewhat worried when the signal from the star disappeared completely. Well, happily it came back, and then later it actually partially disappeared several times. And they deduced the fact it was because the light from the star was passing through the rings, then undiscovered, of the planet Uranus. Well, good hunting.
Thanks for that, Ian. Now, John Field tells us what you can see in the southern night sky.
Kia ora, and welcome to the February Jodcast coming to you from Catherine Observatory. Our evening sky is still dominated by the planet Jupiter, along with the constellations of Orion, Canis Major, and Taurus in our northern sky. Appearing as a bright white star, Jupiter continues to move in front of the distant stars that form the constellation of Taurus the Bull. Taurus is one of the zodiac constellations, the group of constellations that the ecliptic passes through. Over the year, the Sun moves in front of these constellations as the Earth completes its annual orbit around it. The Bull's head appears as a V of stars, with its two horns stretching towards our northern horizon. The red star Aldebaran, along with a V of stars called the Hyades, mark his head. The Pleiades mark the Bull's back and can be found to the west of his head. Visible as a compact cluster of at least six stars, they make a fine sight in binoculars. In Greek mythology, Taurus is the embodiment of the great god Zeus. On the 18th of February, Jupiter and the Moon will be close together in our evening sky. And for some parts of Australia, the Moon will move in front of and cover Jupiter and its moons. This will make a stunning sight seen with the unaided eye or through binoculars or telescope. Gemini and Cancer are two of the other zodiac constellations in our summer sky. The bright stars Castor and Pollux mark the heads of the twins, and they can be found in the north after sunset. Gemini lies on the eastern edge of the Milky Way, and the region around these stars contains a number of faint and distant stars. Within 1 degree of Castor, there are 5 faint galaxies that can be found using large telescopes. The December radiant of the Geminid meteor shower is also near to this star. Pollux, the brightest of the two stars, is the 17th brightest star in our night sky. It is about 35 light years away from us. Nearby to Eta Geminorum is M35, an open star cluster. Under good conditions, it can be seen with the unaided eye as a hazy star. Binoculars or wide-field telescope will be the best way to view this lovely cluster. Cancer the Crab is a fainter constellation of 5 stars, and at the centre, a naked-eye cluster of stars for the Praesepe or the Beehive. This large and bright cluster appears as a nebula to the unaided eye, and binoculars will reveal individual stars. Galileo viewed this cluster with his telescope in 1610, being the first human to see it as a cluster of stars, recording 36. Orion the Hunter, our summer constellation, has a large number of bright stars and sights for binoculars and any size telescope. This bright grouping of stars dominates our summer evening sky and to us southern hemisphere observers hangs upside down. Orion's brightest stars, Rigel, Betelgeuse and Bellatrix, along with the three stars of his belt, form an easily seen pattern in our evening sky. Well placed for viewing is the Orion Nebula, which can be found in the middle of Orion's sword. To the unaided eye, this nebula appears as a fuzzy star. If you have binoculars or a small telescope, they will reveal a bat-shaped cloud. A 100mm or greater telescope will reveal a number of stars in and around the nebula, including a tight group of four stars called the trapezium. Above the belt is Rigel, the brightest star in Orion. It is the sixth brightest star in the night sky. The star is actually a triple star system about 860 light years away, and with a total luminosity of the group estimated to be 130,000 times that of the Sun. To the east are Orion's two hunting companions, Canis Major the large, and below Canis Minor the smaller dog. The brightest star in our night sky, Sirius, marks the colour of Canis Major. For us, the dog is lying on his back with his feet up in the air. Sirius is 8.7 light years away from us, and about 26 times brighter than the Sun. Below Canis Major is Procyon, and it marks the tail of Canis Minor. Just over a third of the way between Sirius and Procyon is a cluster of stars called M50, visible in binoculars. About halfway along the line from Procyon to Betelgeuse, binoculars reveal a rectangular cluster of stars embedded in a faint nebula called the Rosette. Almost overhead in the early evening is the second brightest star in the night sky, Canopus. From midnight, Saturn can be found rising in the east. Saturn will move through the constellation of Libra during 2013. Our autumn and winter months will see Saturn in our evening sky. Saturn rings are slowly tilting towards us, and this will lead to a better view of the rings later this year. If the predictions are correct, Comet Penn stars will be visible in our morning sky during mid to late February. It will be lonely each during twilight and may reach magnitude zero. This comet may be best viewed from the northern hemisphere after its closest approach to the Sun in early March. We hope you have clear skies and during these summer nights take the opportunity to view some of the delights of our southern skies.